From bands like Waking Ashland, We Shot the Moon, and more, this is Jonathan Jones.
Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.
I am Chris Ruggiero. Thank you very much for listening. This is my show where I talk to entertainers, travelers, and inspiring people of all kinds who are out there doing really cool things. Because sometimes you need a little inspiration of your own to make your life a little bit more awesome. Shout out to Between Dreams Clothing and everyone who's been getting on board with that for helping make things like this show and many more things to happen. Check that out at betweendreamsclothing.com. Pick up a shirt. And as a special thank you for listening to this show, when you make a purchase on BetweenDreamsClothing.com, use the code PODCAST at checkout for a 25% discount on your entire order. So let's get into it with Jonathan. Big thanks to him for hopping on my show. I've been trying to get him on the show since I started. He was probably one of the first people who I asked to be on the show, and he was finally ready to share some stories as his life and his career are kind of taking a little bit of a change, and he's up to some new, fresh things that are really cool, and you'll hear about that as we talk about that. I was always a fan of Jonathan's music through, first of all, Waking Ashland, and then as he transitioned into We Shot the Moon. And it was really cool. A few years back, I got the chance to meet him, and we've been friends ever since. So let's get into it. Here he is, Jonathan Jones.
So my name is Jonathan Jones. I am a singer-songwriter, musician. Been trying my hand in music since 2000. In late 2003 professionally, and then I grew up obviously playing music in terrible high school bands. Really no claim to fame, but yeah, I had a band called Waking Ashland that was fun, and then I have a band, We Shot the Moon, and another band called Old Daisy. I kind of do a lot of bands, which we'll talk about. I have this new model that I have found that works pretty well for me.
Why don't we give a little story for the people listening who may know you or maybe don't know you. We met through a booking conference, which is where bands and artists and entertainers like us go and get booked at different types of colleges and events. And I was a fan of your music through Waking Ashland and We Shot the Moon, and kind of just said hello, and then kind of linked up through different things. You were involved in an agency, and I started working with that agency, and other things happened there, which this is all probably pretty boring for people to listen to, but
I think it's interesting. I think NACA is a fascinating world. NACA blows my mind. I'm not a part of NACA anymore, but when I think of my NACA years, they're interesting.
Yeah, and again, for the people who are listening who aren't entertainers and don't know what NACA is, like I said, that's a booking conference where people go and get booked at mostly colleges, and you meet people and talk to people. So what I was getting at there at the beginning was, has there been, what other things have happened that in to you that, how could I say this, what other cool things have happened, people that you've met and things that are just because you, people might have knew who you were or knew your music and introduced themselves. Mm-hmm. Has there been any like really cool people that you've met?
Oh yeah.
Not directly at a show. Of course you meet, you know, thousands of people, but when you're just out in something in a different world and people say hello and talk to you.
Yeah, definitely. I'm gathering my thoughts. So let's see. On a like band level, I've met some really cool people just from being, you know, crossing paths, crisscrossing the country. Like I've run into you know, I played a lot of shows in the past with Plain White Tees. Before One Republic was One Republic, I played some shows with those guys. Actually, they opened for my band Waking Ashland, which is real funny. And there's like a ton of, you know, tons of those bands. Like, I was kind of in the thick of it as all those bands were on the up. You know, we were all trying to make it. Had a cool show a long time ago with The Fray. But they were already kind of established. But those are kind of some of more of the bands I've run into. And then just it's kind of a diminishing of returns because I've taken my creative life and my musical endeavors in a slightly different direction. My focus isn't so much on, being a top 40 radio musician or band. Rather, I've kind of transitioned into songwriting, producing, and just kind of mixing everything in that world. I really love. It's kind of really re-energized me musically. But sorry, I digress. Getting back to, back in the day when Waking Ashland was at its peak, or when We Shot the Moon was doing pretty well, I would meet a lot of people actually in random settings that would, mostly it was people who knew Waking Ashland. And that was always a trip, because during Waking Ashland's heyday, I didn't realize that I was doing a band that would have some minor impact on people. And so it was always flattering and really trippy to run into someone who would, explain how Waking Ashland related to them, which is to draw it back to you and I, which is exactly what happened that night when I met you. It's funny. I like, definitely these memories always stick out because it's, I guess it's a good feeling. It's validation maybe for your art and your struggle. And, it's cool to know that at any time someone may be listening to one of your songs.
Yeah. Now, you said you're doing a lot of different stuff, changing stuff, some stuff that you're doing. You were touring with Waking Ashland. What year, what range were we at there? 2004?
Yep, that would have been 2004 to 2000, late 2007, I believe, or early spring of 2007. Then it fell apart, which is crazy because Waking Ashland, in such a little time, like, we played so many shows. We were always touring, but we were only really a band for like 3.5 years. I was so young. I was like 24 at the end of Waking Ashland. I think I was 24, 25. And we were so young and dumb.
What, you say it fell apart. What does that mean?
What does it mean? It means that I would...
Like, what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I was pretty... I let my ego kind of get out of control. Like, there's good ego and then there's a bad ego. There's, like, confidence and motivation, which you want. You want to be really confident and, like, a go-getter. Like, I call it an MIH, make it happen. But then there's, like, the guy... Like, then there's just where you think too much of yourself and you think... you stop listening to other people around you. And I think, for me, there were many reasons why Waking Ashland ultimately failed, but one of the big reasons was I just wasn't listening to people. I had, like, this great tool set in front of me, and I wasn't utilizing it at all. And so... And we were just, we were burning the candle at both ends, and we didn't know what we were doing because all this stuff happened. Like, all this opportunity came to us, and we had never, this was all stuff we had dreamed about, but we had never really thought about what to do and how to organize ourselves if it truly happened. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good assessment of that.
So at that time, it was the kind of the beginnings of MySpace and kind of like the origins of the social media world.
Yeah.
Which, that's probably, I don't know how I started, how I found you guys, but probably from MySpace or Pure Volume, which was, again, the origins of this, like, social networking world. What do you think that played a role in either, like, starting that and then now to now how things have changed where that is the entire world? I wanted to get your, since you kind of went right through it. For me, it was like I wasn't performing and touring and doing shows at that. I was in college. So I lived it through, like, kind of more of the consumer. I was consuming all of the content rather than out there creating more of it. And then I kind of caught the last and I started performing after, Facebook and everything's kind of started to kick off.
Yeah.
I don't know what the question was in there, but I think you have some thoughts that could probably be kind of cool in there from your experiences.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely have some thoughts. Yeah, MySpace totally blew me away. Like when I started to understand, because that I came up through MySpace and Pure Volume, like you mentioned, and so it was insane because I took that very serious. I was on the forefront of social media at that time because I saw like what it could do. Like I understood it immediately because I had the good fortune of having Jose Nerado around. He toured with Waking Ashland back in the day, and he kind of was always on the end. Like he knew what social site was probably going to take off, and he like in kind of a his own way would kind of teach me or kind of would guide me through that, you know, the protocol of how to use social media. I remember we would have kind of talks about it, so it was cool. It was a good introduction, and then. And then along the way, I just, like, so many social media took over, like you said, and I kind of got overwhelmed, and I started maybe letting social media dictate my, like, who I would be as an artist when I should have just been an artist, written songs. Like, instead of making social media posts, I should have just written a lot of songs each day. So when I saw, like, my obsession with social media kind of affecting my output and my creative you know, my music, I backed away a little bit, and then then social media just went crazy, and I kind of was out of the loop and was kind of ignorant and was thinking that I didn't need it or didn't really care. Only now to, like, more recently, within the last 6 months, as I've been kind of reorganizing my life and kind of I guess you could say I've been re-imaging and laying the foundation for, like, a major chapter too. Like the way I look at We Shot the Moon and Waking Ashland and all that touring and NACA and just all that stuff, that was chapter one and it was pretty badass chapter. But now, like, I'm approaching it utilizing technology to its I'm not afraid of technology. I don't get anxiety anymore because if you organize yourself well, you can lead a really busy creative life but still get stuff done. And still, like, kind of walk that balance between, yes, I need to be a social media presence, or yes, I need to say what I'm doing on social media, but that comes as a secondary to the, you have to have the goods, and I still don't have the goods, and so I've been actually kind of quiet the last year, because I finally understood that I need to, like, put my money where my mouth is, and just, like, go crazy with it, write a ton of songs, try some new things, work with a ton of different people. Yeah, and so it's really cool. I've come full circle, and I feel I'm back on the social media bandwagon, but I'm going to do it a lot better this time. Or I'm going to make it work for me instead of, like, worshiping social media. I'm going to let social media work for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I wonder now if you look at where there's probably less young kids in high school and even college starting bands and out there doing things, because I think they're looking at it the opposite of what you just said, where instead of going out and creating the stuff to post about, they're posting trying to make that what it's about, because they're trying to be a social media star.
Right, and that's a new thing. See, that's hard for me, a social media star, I love that. It's hard for me to understand that because I came after that. Like, I came up early when social media was like the murky waters of social media. And now there's this whole, like, kind of like a rule book. Really, there are no rules, but there seems to be certain guidelines to do social media. Which it's interesting, but to me, you still have to have, like, really good art, or it's all shit. It doesn't matter. Like, you could, like, blog and do anything till the cows come home. That's a terrible analogy, sorry. But it won't matter. Like, no one's going to pay attention. People only want to pay attention to good stuff. And I recognize that now. And I just think from my evolution, it just took me some time to understand, you know, that you need to focus and do quality. Like, there has to be a quality control. You have to really, other people don't have to like what you do, but you definitely have to stand by your work. Like, anything I put out now, I want it to stand the test of time for myself. Like, I want to be able to go back in 5 years and be like, oh, that old Daisy record I did is dope. Like, it sounds good. And so that's kind of the bar I've set for myself. But yeah, I may be getting it wrong too. I'm not, I know that the kids coming up now and the guys who are doing music now, you know, they have their own flow, their own workflow, and they've grown up with social media. So they may not get, it may not derail them like it kind of derailed me and my you know, creative endeavors. Yeah. So who knows?
Going back to how I wanted to touch again on your changes, you know, how you said you're doing less of touring and the college world and more of the other stuff. What exactly, how exactly did that come about, and what does that mean that you're doing more of the your songwriting and production and things?
Yeah. So I think last year I only played like four shows, or like I played like 10 shows last year, and they were all in China. I only play foreign markets now. I don't play the U.S. No, I joke. It's just, that's to show, I say that just to kind of paint the picture of where I've arrived with, you know, with my career and like how I want to do it. So basically I'm not touring as much, one, because I'm married, and I just, you know, it's always good to marry up. And I really like being home with my wife. Like, it sounds like really cliche and dumb, but the truth is I love hanging out with our pets and just doing that. So I try not to leave that much as it is. But when I do leave now, what I'm doing, instead of playing shows, I'm traveling to different places, meeting up with people and writing records, like co-writing records on the spot, that then I'll take and put through my network of contacts, people, friends, and license it out. Because there's a big shift happened with, in my eyes, a big shift happened in the recording industry, or being an artist, where there's a middle class now from licensing. If you have a studio, or if you can get the skill set to make your stuff sound good, and if you have the contacts, like if you have people that are creative and you can go and write with them and you're open to approaching music different, there's like some powerful things that can happen. And that's kind of the model that I've been doing the past 6 months, year. I started it 3 years ago, but I've really refined this whole new model for me. And it's great. Like, it's really liberating. It's fun. Like, I live for songwriting. Like, I live to write songs with other people. And I'm okay. Like, I don't fear the song anymore. Like, I think I said this on another podcast, but I'll say it again. It's like, I don't fear not being able to rise to a genre or to a level that I want, because I'll do it again. Like, or I'll watch some YouTube tutorials. I'll figure it out, or I'll do it my way. And I used to, songwriting used to present, there was a time where songwriting kind of used to present this, what's the word? Like this anxiety, this tension in me. And that, you don't want to write a song like that. And maybe other songwriters or artists out there who create can understand what I'm saying. And you got to get out of that. Like, from my experience, it's like, if that's how you're feeling, start over, push the reset button, and just try different things. There's no rules. Like, being grown up in the Warped Tour scene, like in Waking Ashland, We Shot the Moon, there's all these rules, and they probably were self-imposed. Like, guys who probably do really well in that genre probably realize there really are no rules. You just say, screw it, I'm going to do what I do. And if people aren't paying attention and you want people to pay attention, then just hit the reset button and try again. And so I had to deconstruct all these rules. And a big part of a way I was able to do that was by building a home recording studio. So I, like a year, 2 years ago, I can't even remember now, it's been some time, but I raised funds and I built like a really nice home studio. And I put every cent that I got from my Kickstarter into my home studio. And that was able then to break down, you know, my one-dimensional music kind of interpretation. And so, yeah, it's been amazing. Like, that's kind of what I do. I just find creative people. So to go back to your question, I'm sorry. I talk a lot. But all I do is I have so many friends from back in the day. I just like pick one who thinks it's going to be fun, and we co-write a record, and then we record it either at my studio, at their studio, somewhere else, you know, and then we put it out on a licensing site. We figure out where it's going to fit best. And then I just, you know, and then I basically, that's how a musician can make money. So I don't make money from touring, but then I make money on the royalties from the songs that get used. You know,
yeah.
I don't really want to go into like details of, like financially, but that model for me is good enough where I can just pay my bills and just continue to write songs and continue to hone in my craft, you know?
Yeah, I know you've had some of your songs on some TV shows and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give people a little feel for how that licensing world works, what are some shows that you've, or projects that your stuff has been used on?
Let's see. Well, everything from like One Tree Hill to Roxy, that clothing company, the Roxy. I had a song used a couple months ago in Travelers Insurance. They're a major insurance company. It was a song I co-wrote with Dan Koch. Some of the listeners may know Dan. So Dan and I do this model, and we call it Long Valley. What else has been, as of late, I used to pay attention a lot, and now I just more pay attention. Well, that sounds terrible. Let me defend myself. I didn't mean to sound.
I just collect the paychecks now.
No. But to me, it's like more like I want to wake up and think about, I don't want to live in the past. I want to move forward. Yeah. It's like, and that's all I meant. It's like, but who else, you know, like, the Kardashians used a lot of my stuff one season, The Real World, you know, typical streamlined shows. I think The Voice used an instrumental of like in the background of something, and then, you know, a whole bunch of others, but yeah, it's cool. Like that's just, for me though, it's always one-upping. It's like, okay, that stuff happened, but the conversation I want to get into now is like, how can I make art and music that is really creative and really fulfills me, but then kind of goes on the line that like a company, like bigger companies could use it. Like, why couldn't, what's that guy who made Garden State? Like, I want to write stuff that's in the conversation that he can think about using. Zach Braff or whatever his name is. You know, I think it's Zach Braff. Yeah. And to do that, you just have to take yourself serious. So, but not in a bad way. Like, I think I do. We'll see. Time will tell. But I think I have the abilities, and I'm willing to put in the time. It's just a time equation that I'm willing to follow through on. And I think 2015 already in the licensing world has been a good year, but I think it'll just continue on. And so I'll harp on it again. Like, that's why I don't feel like I need to play live shows anymore. Also, a part of me I remember the last live show in the States I played. It was at this really cool venue called Velour in Salt Lake, in Provo. Love the Velour. Like, love the staff there. It's like a really cool place, a real hotbed for lots of cool bands have come through, or like have gotten their start there. There's like, obviously Neon Trees got their start there. I think it's a debate, but I think Imagine Dragons, people would say that they kind of got their start there. And then, like, there's an up-and-coming band called Van Lady Love that has gotten there, you know, kind of out of that scene. So, anyway, I was playing the show there, and it was a great show. Like, a couple hundred people had come out. I think, like, 250 people were in the room. And they were even responding to the We Shot the Moon songs, but I was so lonely because of the way that I had conducted and what I had turned We Shot the Moon into, which was just a Jonathan Jones solo venture, basically, with a cast of friends. I had, like, created this lonely prison, one-dimensional prison for myself. And so that night I knew, that was, like, maybe two years ago, maybe, and I just knew that I needed to do things different. That was kind of the start of really getting serious with, okay, if I'm going to be an artist in 2015, I've got to totally rethink this. you know, I got to rethink this or I'm going to be working at Starbucks, which is no problem. Like, I've done Starbucks for 2 months, but the best thing Starbucks ever did for me was make me realize I need to try a lot harder at music. Because I'd be like putting pastries at 4:45 in the morning. I'd be putting these pastries and I was getting yelled at why Band of Horses was playing on the loudspeaker. And I'm just sitting there being like, what am I doing? Like, why am I like putting pastries here when I could be writing, like doing a string arrangement for this Band of Horses song? Cause I was jamming on it. And I was like, oh, I like that. I would, that sounds fun too. You know? So I've gone down some weird rabbit hole here, but basically the essence of what I'm trying to say is I just figured it out. I broke all the rules. Like I had made all these weird rules during my Waking Ashlyn and We Shot the Moon years. And now I've been able to just hit the reset button and start over at 32 years old. And I'm old, like, but it's working. Like, I used to fear age, but I'm sorry, I'll let you speak. But it's like, my last thought would be, I'm like not that young, sexy musician anymore. You know, but there's a way to do it still. So it's awesome. I'm glad I'm not that. I'm glad I'm like fat. Actually, I'm not fat. I am losing a little weight. I did kind of get a little, not fat, but I like put on, like, football season, I gained so much weight during football season. It's ridiculous. But now, like, football's gone, and, like, magically 10 pounds have left me. It's weird.
I wanted to touch on how you said you create rules for yourself, and how you get out of that is resetting that. And
it's my cat. I don't know if you heard it. Sorry.
Such a cool. I see it. an interesting kind of thing to think about because personally, so for me, it's like growing up, coming out of college and starting performing. It was like I had something to prove that I could go out and do it. I didn't need to go get a job. I could perform full-time and make a living. And I think at first, when I first started doing it, a lot of the reason why I was doing it was so that I could say that I was doing it. And know how much... There's it.
You don't know how much what? Sorry, I just had to take care of. That was a life issue I just had to take care of.
Yeah, it'll be a mystery to the listeners what just happened.
Yep. Yeah, my tabby cat.
Yeah, so, like, thinking back, you know, I realized that a lot of that was for kind of trying to, I guess, trying to impress people and being able to say, yeah, I do this and I don't have a job. I have to go to work. And then you start to realize, again, as you get older, that I guess maybe people don't care, and then you need to create a new reason to what you're doing. So then a lot of your rules of why I was doing this, I was doing this kind of, not for bragging rights, because it's like, but you wanted to be able to say, oh yeah, I'm a touring person and all this. And I think looking back to when I was just starting, if you would say now, like, oh, I don't want to tour, I'm fine staying home and traveling, you know, to work on music but not being in front of a crowd, I would be like, I don't understand that at all. Like, if you want to be an entertainer, the point is to be in front of a crowd and get famous and do all this stuff. And now I think as I'm, like you said, getting older, you start to realize that you can create valuable work and work that you could be proud of. But it's not so much for that recognition and for other people to give you feedback. You know, it's just like you start to do it. That transition is to become more about doing it for yourself, creating stuff that will help other people, but something that you're proud of and you don't need as much recognition. I guess I said that twice, but
it's a good word.
That was really what I got out of that, and it kind of connected really well with me. And I wanted to touch on, again, what if you're stuck in a rut, often you find it, I think, especially in entertainment and whatever you're doing, you see this thing on the other side of the fence that you're looking at, the grass is always greener type thing, that if only I could get over there, then everything would be okay and everything would work and that would be the ticket. And then as, you know, as an entertainer, you you often get to see the other side. You know, it's like things happen really fast and you're over there.
You are.
And then all of a sudden it doesn't you start looking back to where you were, and then that was what was great. Or, you know, there's another fence on the other side, and it's just this never-ending thing. So there's that rut that you can get in where it's things are never good enough and you need to keep working and all this stuff. So besides that, how you said to just reset and reanalyze things, what do you think is a good take home for a person in any stage, whether they're in entertainment or a musician or not, or if they're just in a going to work every day at a job? How do you provide them with something that to get over that grass is always greener type mentality?
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to...
There wasn't a real question in there, but I think there's... Like I said, with people that things happen, like how you said things kind of just took off, you know, back in Waking Ashland, and then things take off, and then things stop working, and now you're in this new world that you probably never thought would ever exist, and it's kind of starting to work.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. I understand what you're asking. So... I think what you have to do for the and this goes across the board, musician, painter, carpenter, I don't know if a carpenter would work, but anyone that's creative or that wants, anyone that wants to change the conversation for their life, what it starts with is there's some dark truths that you need to understand about yourself. And until you can go there with yourself and say, hey, maybe this things aren't happening because I'm actually not, maybe keep track of your hours, and then you see, oh, I only put in 2 hours this week to my music. Oh, surprise that you're not going anywhere. You know, it's like, oh, that's why you're not putting in any time. So I think it starts there. And then if you are putting in the time, if you put in like 5 hours, 8 hours a day toward a project, and it's not having the return, or it's not taking you to a place that you would desire, then I think it's time to just cut your losses and try it, repackage it, try it a different way. Don't keep forcing something that's broken. It'll never fix life. I don't buy into that things fix themselves. Like, you create everyone has the ability to create some sort of opportunity for themselves, and everyone should, because that's like the beauty to me. That's the beauty of life, is just doing what you want, doing something of a value that speaks to you, you know. And so, yeah, I think, and it's surrounding yourself maybe with like being open to other people's thoughts, but while retaining your vision. I'm not saying be a pushover, but I think it's really important to collaborate. Like, that's a thing I missed out on when I was younger, and my conversation would probably be different today if I would have been more open to collaborating with creative people, even if they did it so different. Like, that used to give me tension, like seeing someone approach a song or like a band or anything differently than me. All of a sudden I would want them out of my, you know, out of my Google Hangout, out of my, you know, out of my social network, out of my site, because they presented a threat to me. But now I can't get enough of, I like someone that makes me nervous now. I embrace it. Because the worst thing that happens is after a couple times of trying your endeavors with this person, then you have an honest conversation. Say, hey, it's not working for me. Let's meet back in a couple months. Let's grow as people and then try again. So then you don't burn the bridge, but you've been up front with someone, and then you literally, or maybe I didn't use that word right. I always forget what the faux pas is there. But then you move on to the next thing. Like, I have a whiteboard in my studio that has 7 different people, creative people on it that I want to do stuff with. And so I'm just going to go down that list. And then the big thing that I've learned is whatever you start with someone, you have the end in mind. You have to. So if I start, like, I have a friend, Caleb Loveless. He used to play in the band Van Lady Love, and he him and I are going to get together in June, and we're going to write songs together, but we're going to complete them. Like, it's not going to just be like, oh, let's see what happens. No, I'll tell, like, him and I know what's going to happen. Like, we're going to write as many songs as we can, then we're going to go in my studio, and we're going to produce them to the best of our abilities, and then we're going to, and then we're going to take that, those songs, and disperse them to the networks of licensing companies, and to, you know, and we're going to make a group out of it, but it doesn't matter. Like, that group never has to play. That's the thing. That's the rules that I broke. Like, I can have seven different bands at the same time with the purpose of just leading a fulfilled life. Like, musically, I'll be fulfilled. I know it seems like I'd probably be spreading myself thin, but I'm okay because I'm not chasing the limelight. And you know what? The fact that I'm not chasing the limelight, maybe one of these seven projects really resonates with someone, and then that's all a bonus. I wanted to actually go back and touch on what you said. A big change, like some of my recent middle class musician success, if you want to call it, or just stability, has come from realigning how I thought. Like, I used to be like you, and I had something to prove, and it sounded cool being like, I'm waking up in Madison, Wisconsin today, and tomorrow I'm going to be in New York City. You know, so it's like, that was the ego in me, like wanting people to care what I'm doing, or I just, you know, that feeling that I'm trying to say, and that is a toxic. Yeah. For me, that is not good. So I will never subscribe to that again. What I've exchanged that with, though, is I do have what am I trying to say? I do want to perform live again. I do want to play a lot, but when I perform live again on a somewhat consistent basis, it will be selfishly for me, because I wrote songs that are that I love so much that I have to, even if it's like performing, you know, I live in Davis, California these days now. Even if it's performing at a coffee shop in Davis, California, I'm not above, like, that sounds great to me right now. Like, some of these songs that I'm writing, I'll just get up there on a piano and sing my little heart out. And even if five people are watching, it doesn't matter, because I am at the core of my being, performing is a part of the creative process. It's just, I've realigned how I think about performing. It's a much healthier, you know, I'm in a much healthier mindset. Because I was just cheating on my love, basically. I was cheating on music. The way I was looking at live performance was ruining music for me, because it was spilling over. And last to touch on the grass is all, like, it's funny, I can relate to being on the other side. Like, you work so hard to achieve these steps, you know, and then you get on the other side, or you get into a new conversation that you've been trying to get into, and then you realize it's the same old conversation. It's the same conversation with just like, oh, this guy has like a cool hoodie on, or like, oh, this guy has a lot more tattoos than I have. But it's the same conversation, because you're being a real person with people, and all people just want you to be real. And I missed that along the way. I somehow missed that, and I wasn't, you know, nothing extreme. I've always been real, but I wasn't being in touch with really who I am truly as an artist. And I know that, I mean, that probably maybe sounds kind of a little deeper than some people would understand, but it's just a good place to be when you don't care about what other people think. Because growing up in the Christian market, especially too, for me, you really worry about what people think. And I will never again, like, I could care less what people think. Like, people can just unsubscribe from what I'm doing, you know, and people have. Like, I've slowly started to change, nothing drastically yet, but I've noticed, like, people there, you know, it's getting rid of people. I'm making people, you know, some people are getting nervous maybe, or some people don't like this newfound person, and that's okay. I could understand why, too, why someone wouldn't like that.
Yeah, and again, going back to that before, I think that's as people get older, then that's okay to realize that, you know, that's the part of making things happen, when you realize that you're not here to please everyone, and you don't need to.
No, you don't. It's okay. Was that just water that I heard you sipping?
I did a minute ago, not just now, though.
No, interesting. It sounded like you swallowed water.
No, there's a dog barking here.
Love the dogs. In my recording studio, I love dogs. I love sirens. I love my cat just coming up and sticking her ass right in my face while I'm trying to record. It's great. It's great.
Cool. Well, I think that's probably good stuff for our listeners here. Unless there's anything else you want to add in to finish it off. Anything that you've been up to or any other things that you want to talk about, or you can kind of just, we can chop out where I
and then it can
organically go there. Inorganically go there.
I'm all about the purists. You could just leave this on; it'd be interesting to me. But you obviously know the podcasting world much better than me. So do obviously edit it however you think is best. Let me think though before we end. If there's anything else I want to touch on, because I wrote down some things.
Share a little bit. I like to get people. You know, for me, it's when I'm out traveling and going back to posting on Instagram how awesome my life is because I get to travel, like you just said, like what we're getting away from doing. But it is cool when you post stuff like that because most people don't get to do it. So there's the balance of you don't want to be sound like you're just saying, oh, I'm here today. We all see those people on Instagram, you know, posting just the sellout crowds and all that.
Yeah.
But there's something really awesome, like, you know, you get to go to China to play shows. Like, no one gets to do that.
Yeah, let me talk about China actually for a second, because we'll end on China because it's a crazy thing that happened over there to me. So I'll just talk about that. Okay. So China kind of came out of left field. The irony with China was that I was pretty much done in my book playing We Shot the Moon shows. Like, I was keeping the brand alive by releasing music, but I'm like, oh, I don't need to play, like, I just don't need to play shows. But then I got an email from a record label over in China, and the first We Shot the Moon album I ever put out, Fear and Love, had gotten popular in, like, the, what I would guess would be the Warped Tour kind of circuit of China, or the, you know, the indie, pop indie crowd, kind of like those kids, they had discovered Fear and Love, which was a trip because that record was the first, I did that record in late 2007. And so they just asked me, they're like, would you like to come over and tour on this? You know, we'll bring you over. You can, you know, bring a band and we'll fly you all over China. We'll provide the backline and just, you know, you'll have a tour manager over there and just play, you know, play these shows. So it was obviously a no-brainer because, I mean, that's the dream, right? I had never even gotten to do that level here in the States. Like, this was a new level for me, and it was kind of a fake-out because it's funny. You go over there, and so you're, like, flying, like, one day, like, you're in Guangzhou, and then you're flying to Beijing the next day to play a show. And it really made me stop and think about what it must be like for, like, people who have made it, truly made it, you know, as a rock star. That's an insane life that no one even understands until you're at that life. Like, I don't even understand it. And I had, like, little things like that happen. So it was good, though, because I was able to see, like, that's not actually what I want to chase after. Like, I took it because it was such an experience, but doing that and being at the highest level of touring for the first time in my life, I still wasn't as fulfilled as, like, writing a good song and recording a good song. You know what I mean? Mm. So it was a good lesson, but it was, anyway, back to the story of China. Like, I went over there and, yeah, all these, you know, played, like, I've been over there three times. I go over there every 6 months, it seems like. And I'm trying to think what happens. Yeah, you just, you know, you show up at the show and all these Chinese kids are there singing along to your songs. And I'd say the crowds are anywhere on the smaller side from 150 kids to on the bigger side, like 600, 700. No, that's a lie. I always do that. I need to get better at that. There's no way there's 600-700 people there. There was like the biggest show I think was like 500, and that was in. I'm gonna get better at that. See, that's like old habits die hard, and that was like,
yeah,
it's cool enough just going to China. I don't know why I need to like make this extra, add this extra 200 people that weren't there, and that's something that I'm working on because it's bullshit. Like, I'm just lying to myself, and there's no need to do that. Like, it doesn't matter. Okay, yeah. Back to China though. Back to my phantom 300 people shows. It was awesome. It was some of the best moments of my life. I was just truly lucky to be able to go over and have fun because I was in a good mindset. Like, I wasn't being too serious. Like, I was over there joking around, like, not thinking about what my stage outfits even were going to be because people just came because they liked the music. And not to say that record's music's even good, but something in that record people liked over there. And so it was really cool to get on the same wavelength with them and connect. Like, I don't speak Chinese, but I speak the language of, oh, you're smiling, jumping up and down, and like doing this pointy finger thing at me. I'm going to reciprocate that, and I'm going to smile, I'm going to jump up and down, and I'm going to point my finger back at you. And that was just... that was kind of the vibe of the whole trip. And we got to see some cool sites. I've been able to see like all the cool stuff in China, you know, cause like Dan Koch will go with me and he's such a go-getter for travel. It's amazing. It's like you pay people good money to do what Dan Koch does on these trips. Like he'll just like today we're going to the Great Wall. Today we're going to this temple. We're going to go see Mao's embalmed body today, you know?
Yeah.
So it was cool. It was like a vacation and I was working at the same time, but it was a vacation within a vacation.
Nice. That's how, yeah. I think that's a good mindset to have in whatever we're doing. That's what I'm trying to work on as well, to when you're, whatever you're doing, consider it a vacation. You know, whatever you're doing, you're probably pretty lucky to be doing it, even if you're complaining about it and yeah, it doesn't seem awesome. There's, again, someone else is looking at you. This is another cheesy thing, but it's kind of true. Someone else is looking at you wishing that they had your life, no matter what you're doing. And that's kind of valuable to keep thinking about and live like you're on vacation, because in some people's world you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to end on saying it's been fun for me. You know, I'm sorry I didn't get on your podcast until now. I just honestly wasn't ready. I hadn't arrived to this place in my life where I was ready to step out and kind of what am I trying to say? I wasn't ready to just show my face again and kind of go through these musical steps of being an artist, you know? But now, you know, I'm ready again. But during that time, I've been paying attention and I've really noticed, like, what you're trying to do. You're, like, the culture you're trying to start. You've really started to think outside the box, and it's really inspiring. And I really just only want to surround myself with people who even, like, people who are failing even too, like, cause we're all going to fail at these endeavors, but it just takes one little thing to like catch on and then you have like, then you have it. And so I've really noticed that you've really upped your game and you've been doing well and it's inspiring. And I think at a subconscious level, it's helped me, realize like, hey, I can go start my own branding and culture. That's what I was looking for. I want to brand myself, but in a good way. Like, I want to truly brand myself as this is what I stand for, and like this is what I do. And there will hopefully be people out there that will resonate with, and they'll want to become a part of the tribe. They'll want to come work with me. They'll want me to produce their record. They'll want me to mix them. Because every day I'm honing those skills, and maybe I'm not ready right now. And that's a truth I'm okay with. I'm okay that maybe my abilities aren't yet up to par with how my ear perceives sound. But that's not going to stop me, you know, because I'm shooting for a real high place. So, you know, along the way, hopefully people will assess me like, okay, he's now gotten to this place. Sounds like now I want to go work with him, and that would be great. And that's like That's kind of what everything's working toward. The only goal is to just keep working with different people and doing music in any fashion, like mixing, producing, songwriting. Let's do a band. Let's just drink some beers and like not record music and just have like a blues progression that we play at our local bar every Friday. Like these are there are no rules, and this is the brand and the culture that I want to start around myself as a musician.
Thank you guys so much for listening. My favorite part of this was that we don't need to follow these rules that there are in place, or that we think that they're in place. I think often we have these rules that we make up for ourselves, that this is how you're supposed to do things, and we live by that, and often those rules are very limiting instead of liberating and freeing. So stop listening to those dumb rules that you've made up inside your head and do whatever you want as long as you're not hurting other people. Don't hurt other people. Do cool stuff that makes other people's lives better. So get out there and do something. Thank you for listening. Again, visit BetweenDreamsClothing.com. Use the code PODCAST for a 25% discount. And thank you guys for making everything that I do awesome by listening and watching and paying attention. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.